outdoors, coming on the airwaves, coming your way.
Hey now, we're outside indoors, beat on a buck on a snowy day.
Hey now, we're inside outdoors, baiting a hook and anchors away.
Baiting a hook and anchors away.
Baiting a hook and anchors away.
Inside Outdoors is brought to you from the beautiful rolling hills, forests, and lakes of southern Indiana. Produced in Bloomington and brought to you live every Saturday morning at 7 a.m. right here on your local community radio station, WFHB. Inside Outdoors features hosts Don Jordan, Buddy Bill Moser, and Rich Reardon, and gives you everything you need to know about the outdoors surrounding our local community, our state, and around our nation. With fishing, hunting, local and national outdoor news, the environment, natural resources, safety, issues in our community, and just down-home family fun, our goal is to inspire how to be a good steward of our precious natural resources. You can call into our show at 812-323-1200 and ask a question or tell us what's on your mind. So sit right back, get a cup of coffee, journey with us into the lakes and woods, and find out what our natural resources have to offer. If you miss the show, you can listen online at WFHB.org. Just go to the public affairs listing, and you'll find a podcast of our show at Inside Outdoors. This is WFHB Bloomington, Indiana, volunteer-powered community radio at 91.3 FM for South Central Indiana, also 98.1 in Bloomington, 100.7 in Brown County, 106.3 in Ellettsville, and online at WFHB.org. When you listen to WFHB, sometimes you can't predict what you're going to hear next. Isn't that wonderful? Our volunteer DJs play music you won't find anywhere else on the radio. Our award-winning news and public affairs programs aren't heard on other stations, and we celebrate the delightful diversity and vibrant culture of South Central Indiana. But when you listen, remember that we need you. We always need donations from listeners to keep on going and growing. If you click the donate button on our website, wfhb.org, you'll find out how easy it is to become a sustaining member. If you can give us a small donation every month, automatically and securely, you'll help WFHB in the best way possible. And then when you hear our fun drive appeals, you'll feel really good. Thanks. Hey, you're listening to Inside Outdoors. This is Rich Reardon, and I'm talking with Don Jordan. Don, how you doing?
I'm pretty good. How are you?
Good. Before I get started, I just want to say that you're listening to WFHB right here in Bloomington, Indiana. We are doing this via Zoom, and Bill can't make it today, so... It's just Don and I for a while, and I just wanted to let you know where you were and what you were listening to.
I know you're just back from vacation. I'm sure you're refreshed and raring to go.
I'm getting there. It takes a while to get over a long drive, the older you get.
Yes, it does. Did you drive it back in one day?
Actually, it was almost like doing it in 2 days because we left our B&B in the central Colorado area and went up through the mountains, ended up at Rocky Mountain State Park right around sunset, which was amazing. And I don't know if you've ever been up there.
I have not. No, that's in Colorado, right?
Yeah. It's not too far from Denver up into the mountains there, you know, biggest part of the Rockies. And there's a road that takes you way up to the top, and it's just a big, giant valley that's there that you can see every direction.
Right. I know you took in a lot of high mountain areas if you were out in Rocky Mountain Park. And...
Yeah, I went to New Mexico and Colorado, and it was quite an outdoors experience because we were also social distancing from everyone and everything. We got some B&Bs. You know, we weren't sharing anything with anybody. And so we stayed three nights in Albuquerque. And, of course, I'm an old Albuquerque guy. I went to school there and lived there for 4 years in the late 70s. So it was quite different than the 70s, believe me.
I bet. Yes. Although some places around the country look a lot like the 70s right now.
That's true.
And have for the last couple of weeks.
It was, you know, as more than just talking about being out there, it was really quite amazing to see the country and what's going on in it. Because I've been just in my house for months, and pretty much, other than going to the grocery store. So it was strange to see that, like, everything that had anything to do with the arts or, you know, stores or anything like that was closed. A lot of people homeless on the streets in Albuquerque.
Really?
Yes, there were. And the city itself was very... has grown quite a bit. When I think when I was there, there was 350,000 people, and now there's you know, well over a million. And well,
that's quite a bit.
It's like Breaking Bad there, you know, that you can tell there's a lot of gang activity. It's just not a place I think I'd want to live anymore. I don't really want to talk down the city because there's a lot of beautiful places there and beautiful parts to it. But I feel that it's slipped a bit with the, you know, just the amount of population that's there.
But I've been through there twice in my lifetime. And the first time would have been in the 1954, which was a lot different than it is now. And I was through there again in the 70s. It'd be the middle 70s at some point.
Right.
And it was kind of more like you're describing.
Right. It was definitely a city when I was there, but there wasn't a lot of, it didn't feel like in the neighborhoods you were in that it was crowded or anything, you know, and now it feels more like a regular old city, you know, almost everywhere you go, there's tons of people and a bunch of new buildings, and of course everybody's pretty aware of it. I think it's become also kind of a little bit more of a film destination. Of course, you had Breaking Bad and Better Call Saul, which were all shot there. And I enjoyed watching those besides that I thought they were cool. It was fun to kind of know where they were in Albuquerque and stuff because it was mostly shot right in that whole area. And it's a gorgeous place. I'm a little more attracted to Colorado, I think, nowadays. New Mexico is a very harsh place, and what I mean by that is it's not like New Arizona harsh, you know, like we're 120 degrees or whatever. I mean, it was like 90, 95 degrees, but you didn't feel that. You don't sweat. It's so dry.
Oh, it's that dry heat.
Yeah. Well, it's true. it is true. You don't feel as uncomfortable unless you're sitting in the sun, you know.
Exactly.
And the sun is definitely more brilliant and intense, and of course you're up at 5,000 feet, so but
sunburn heaven.
Yeah. And so of course I've said we were social distancing, so one of the issues, the first issue was that we had planned to go to Chaco Canyon, which I really wanted to see again. I haven't seen it since the 70s. And if people are familiar with Chaco Canyon, it was the Anasazi city dwelling, you know, the cliff dwellings and the kivas and everything. Just an amazing place, historically and also astronomically. Apparently they had a real knowledge of the solar system and the seasons. And so there's just a lot of stuff to explore and discover. And I really wanted to go up there, but they closed all the state parks to anyone from out of state. If you could show your New Mexico ID, you could get in. And then they had these billboards all over that said, if you come to our city, you have to quarantine for 14 days, which I didn't quite understand what they meant there. Because, you know, we had a B&B, we were going to be there 3-4 days and then leave. And of course we were wearing our masks when we got, you know, when we had to get gas, you know, basically that was about it. And the only food you could get was pretty much drive-through, so that got pretty old pretty quick because I'm not a big fan of eating through a drive-through.
Question.
Yeah.
Question. Were the federal places closed down, like the Gila National Forest? And
No, you could go into the national stuff. You just couldn't go into the state-run places.
Yeah. Elephant Butte, do you know where that is?
I know where it is. We didn't go down south that far. We basically stayed in the north part of the state.
Uh-huh. Okay. And were you up at the altitude at all?
Yes.
in New Mexico, that is?
Yeah, the first day we went up to 12,000 feet on the Sandia Crest, and then the next day I took Shay to see my old haunts. I lived in the South Valley, you know, in kind of a Chicano section of town. I had an acquaintance at the time who rented me a place. Gosh, it was like $250 a month in the South Valley. But anyway, yeah, we got up to the high places. We went west to Mount Taylor, which is near Grants, New Mexico. You can see it from Albuquerque in the west. But before I tell you about that, I did want to mention driving out because, you know, of course we drove and we went through Missouri and Oklahoma, and Oklahoma just gave half of its land back to the Indians.
Yes, so yes, I saw that.
That was kind of interesting, and I heard some people talking on the radio about it. And
I thought that was the federal courts that gave the land.
Yes. It's basically back to the Indians that were moved from all over the country, because they're Cherokee and Miami,
yes,
of course, from
Apaches.
Apache some, and a lot of them were from the East Coast, like yeah, the Trail of Tears from Florida. The Seminoles went up there, and the Miami and stuff. So anyway, it's kind of interesting to see that they're able to go back and reclaim at least their reservation land. And
yeah,
I don't really know all that, what that's all about, but it's a pretty rich area. I mean, there's still oil and natural gas and all kinds of stuff there. So
minerals,
a lot of minerals,
uranium,
wind power. It's interesting that we drove through there right after that happened. And anyway, then we went up on Mount Taylor, which is west of Albuquerque. You can see it from the city, and there's a lot of volcanic activity there. You can see it in when you drive through the mesas, and there's all these amazing layers with, you know, little black streaks through them, and you can tell where the, you know, where cinder cones and other things are. So it's real interesting. And we went up on that mountain first. That one's about 11,000 feet or so, and named after Zachary Taylor, but to the Navajo people it's always been Sudzil, which is the Blue Bead Mountain. Anyway, made it up to the top of that, and of course, just being
what's
up at those.
What's the temp like?
It was beautiful.
At 13,000 feet, it
was like 65, 70 degrees.
Oh, that's pretty warm.
And, it was about 11,000 feet, but it was beautiful. It was a little chilly, but not too bad. And so I took a bunch of pictures. I had my Nikon with my telephotos, and I also had my GoPro and, of course, our phones. So I got so many pictures, I don't know what to do with them.
I know. It's the digital camera is a very good thing in many respects. But in that respect, you can definitely overdo it, because you can hardly really sort through them just
right,
looking at all of them.
Yeah.
You know, it's difficult.
I couldn't help myself from every time I'd see something, I'd want to stop and take a picture. And she was into it too. She was taking some pictures as well. And so we kind of made it a photographic journey, and there was some just incredible things to see. The first night we were there, and talking about Inside Outdoors, we drove to the back of the Sandias. The Sandias are the mountains that sort of are right there in Albuquerque at, and they're about, I think, about 12.5 or something like that. And it's interesting, those mountains, because on one side, the Albuquerque side, which is the Rio Grande Valley, it just goes straight up. You know, they're just like big cliffs. And on the other side, it just kind of winds down. You know, although they're big, it goes kind of flat down to the valley. On the west is dry, and on the other side is wet because the clouds form and then it rains over on the other side.
It's the old Rocky Mountain east slope,
yep,
west slope deal.
Exactly.
It goes all the way through there, you know, the whole entire chain.
Yep.
It's like that.
But I used to drive up there, you know, you can literally drive up there in about 45 minutes from Albuquerque. And
well, that's nice.
We went up there one night, it was raining pretty bad, but it just had enough break that you could see the city from the mountain, from the cliff, the crest there. And so that was kind of nice to see. But driving up there, I've come around a corner coming up the mountain, and there's a huge elk. Oh my gosh. But I Don, I've seen elk before, but this guy was the biggest one I've ever seen. It had to have, I'm guessing, 16 to 20 points.
That's a lot.
It was one of those antlers that just, there's so many points you can't even see it, and it was weighing his head down. When he tried to run, his head was kind of, you know, going down. I was like, I have never seen anything that big. And that was kind of amazing because it was at the bottom of the, you know, kind of down near where the houses are and stuff, like not really up on the mountain. So did get to see some wildlife, a lot more elk and deer. You know, the mule deer that are out there are real big. I've got big ears. And
Did you get any looks at the San Juan River?
No, we never got up to the northwestern area. But
what rivers did you happen to see?
Well, the Rio Grande, of course, which is a big one, because we stayed kind of in that area. We went up into one of my favorite places called the Jemez, which is on the other side of Los Alamos and Santa Fe, kind of going west. But you can't get to it from that side, from the east side. You have to go kind of to the bottom of it and up through a river valley. Actually, the Jemez River, which is it's a tributary of the Rio Grande, which a lot of them are in that area. That's an amazing place to go, and we spent a whole day getting to the top of there. There's hot springs and stuff up into that area.
Did you get down south around Silver City or anything like that?
No, we really didn't go south. Actually, the night we went to the Jemez, we came back to the bottom, because you have to kind of follow your the same way out, but we went back there and went up on 550 towards Cuba, which probably doesn't make sense to many people, but it's up in the Tablelands.
Oh, yes. How was that?
It was incredible. And, you know, we went there to stargaze and look at the sunset and then also the appearance of the comet and see the stars, which are just stunning in that area in the dark, you know. So we were out in the middle of nowhere. That was really nice, except for the fact that we were only, you know, say 80, 90 miles from Albuquerque. So there was, on one side of us, there was a big glow, you know.
Yeah.
But that was the first time we saw the Neowise Comet here in Indiana. Hadn't seen it yet. Partially because where I am, you can't really see. It's down by the horizon after sunset. And it's kind of hard to get to a place where you can see it real well in Bloomington, at least the southern part of Bloomington.
Well, I'll have to relay to you, Joe and I went out to Comet Watch one evening.
Oh, good.
We went out past the Blucher Pool sewage plant, which was the closest, darkest area out on the north side of Bloomington, northwest right. side of Bloomington, with easy access and open field. And we had great view of the Big Dipper and then the comet below it, but boy, the comet was not all that visible until it got much darker.
Right.
And it was kind of faint. With the most visible thing was the tail.
Right.
And it was huge.
Yeah.
Very much bigger than I'd seen on the Hale-Bopp and the Halley's comet
right.
earlier in my life. And the body of the comet itself, this one, whatever its name is, which I can never remember,
Neowise,
was kind of indistinct. It looked kind of like maybe a short cigar,
yeah.
you know, cigar stub. And
right.
It wasn't really distinct. And we were out there, we stopped out on the road there, and you wouldn't believe how much traffic there is on Bottom Road. I mean, there was fairly steady traffic coming to and fro out there.
Right.
We had a woman from Psi Iota Psi, which is the local women's service sorority that runs the thrift shop down on Rogers and 4th, I believe, or something like that. Anyway, she was out there, and there was a girl who worked for a landscape company wondered what we were doing, and she stopped to watch it too. By the time, you know, we had four or five people stop there and made a little group comet watching.
And right.
The best tip of the night was, of course, provided by me. in order to really see this thing, especially to spot it the first time you were trying to locate it, you know, and at night you can see things better if you look off from it.
Right.
And that's how we all managed to locate the comet as the evening wore along. And then the mosquitoes came out and we all went home, but saw the comet anyway. I remember the Hale-Bopp comet when I saw it in Florida on a really clear night, and it was up higher, way higher in the sky. It had some color in it. And
right.
This particular comet had, it was just icy looking, you know, pretty much gray, white, black,
mm-hmm.
and, which I was kind of surprised. I was expecting to see a more colorful comet than we saw. But anyway, we saw it, and that's a good place. If there's another comet that comes up near the Big Dipper, that's a good place to watch it.
Right.
And of course, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
That being close to the Blucher Pool, they have a outdoor light there that's up in the air about 50 feet and is as bright as 100 Coleman lanterns.
Wow.
If you can imagine that. And that was the brightest light source around anywhere. And you dasn't look at it because it ruined your vision for looking back up at the comet.
So right.
I wish they had a slightly less startling light at the sewage plant. And of course, the sewage plant was non-odoriferous. So, you know, we didn't have anything to worry about there. It was actually a pleasant evening. We had the farm fields there full of corn, one field anyway, across right where we were parked, and lots of frogs going that evening.
Right.
Some frogs, and so we saw a few bats. And, of course, that's just down the road from the Sycamore Land Trust natural bean blossom bottoms area.
Right.
And it's a nice little spot in the northern part of Monroe County. It was an enjoyable thing to do. It was something different for a evening. I don't know if the comet's still visible or not. I think they said it was gone.
Yeah, it's about gone now.
So I don't know whether you can still see it or not.
It definitely changed even within the week that I was out there. And apparently, the closer it gets to the sun, the more the tail kind of spreads out. And they don't know whether it's going to just burn up or keep going. And because it, you know, comes like every 6,000 or 7,000 years or something like that.
Right. I don't believe we'll see the next visit.
No, I don't think so. But it was certainly amazing to see. And I enjoyed the heck out of it.
Yeah, it was an event.
Speaking of frogs and stuff, just getting a little off track from New Mexico, but have you been hearing the night noises lately, the katydids and such? Just seems to be prolific right now, which I have kind of been lamenting for years. I it seems like a lot quieter, but right now it's real noisy at night where I am.
Well, we have cicadas, of course, you know, the big green ones,
mm-hmm.
which make a lot of noise in the early evening. And yeah, I've heard more frogs than usual. Mm-hmm. And I think that's because we've had more rain than we have come to expect around here.
Oh, yeah. I hear you guys had a lot of rain when I was gone the last couple of weeks.
We did. We had a couple of gully washers, and then we had a couple of kind of what I want to say, they were kind of piddled out. There was a little bit of rain, but not anything like what we were expecting or led to believe there would be by the weather service.
Mm-hmm.
But as usual, those storms approach, no matter whether they come from the south or the west or whatever, as they hit the Indiana state line and head towards Bloomington, they begin to break up, and sometimes they actually split apart and go south and north of us.
Right.
And they'll, Bedford will get rain and Martinsville will get rain. And here we are high and dry.
All right.
So we had some of that also. But hey, my garden is for a change. We have pretty good tomatoes this year. We have quite a few of them.
Great.
And I used that. Remember the guy we had on, the tomato expert?
Sure. Curtis Cantwell Jackson with the Renaissance Farms tomatoes seeds that he does.
I used that fertilizer, told us to use this fertilizer called Tomato Tone.
Right.
T-O-N-E. And it works like a champ. I've got bigger tomatoes and better plants than I've had in the past.
Was that, 7 or 8. Is that to try to keep the blight away, or is that just like a fertilizer?
It is a fertilizer, but it has lots of things in it. It's primarily, the body of the stuff is worm casings.
Right.
In other words, worm poop, you know. And boy, it really, I think that having good food helps the plants fight off this blight.
Yes.
And even though I have mostly early girls, you know, they have not been affected by the blight hardly at all. But I've got a Mr. Stripey, that's a heirloom variety, which has one tomato on it, but it's the biggest one in the garden.
Wow.
And I have a Better Boy, which is really doing better than any Better Boys that I've had for years now. So I can only attribute that. Well, having the extra water definitely helps,
mm-hmm.
and helps a lot. And I had read someplace that that's one of the biggest mistakes gardeners make is not giving their tomato plants enough water. So I water them every night now, and they're doing great.
Great.
And oh, I wish Bill was here. I replanted my radishes because I had planted them during the full moon last month.
Mm-hmm.
And I planted them on the new moon. That would have been last Monday, not this week, but the week before last. And they're coming up now. So we're gonna get a test on whether or not planting them under the new moon made any difference or not.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so there you go. That's about all I have to say about that. Oh, I see you have a background picture on your Zoom.
I just put one up of New Mexico.
One of your own, right?
Yeah. Well, I'll once I come up with one, I'll show you. But our garden is doing really great, and I'm very surprised we're not running into too many problems as far as the blight or anything. Oh, here we go.
Oh, and Joe had picked her first monarch caterpillar 2 days ago, and it's already growing by leaps and bounds, and is chomping away on its milkweed leaf and jar sitting here on the kitchen table.
Right.
And, so we have milkweeds are just enormous this year.
Yeah.
Enormous milkweeds. That has to be from the rain. And they all produced big blossoms, bloom flowers, and they are extremely fragrant. So it's a good year for milkweed, for sure.
Well, yeah, our tomatoes are doing really good.
Oh, I bet they are. Mine are too. They're outgrowing their cages. They've escaped their cages. It's like you have an electric fence up.
You've got an electric fence up, so that's been helping a lot.
Yes, that does help. Although, you know, when the deer get used to it, that I've seen them just lean up against those electric
right.
It doesn't bother them at all. But looks good. Your garden looks good.
Yeah, it's pretty fun. We got a lot of work to do, but it's great.
I was going to mention, you mentioned the farmer's market. I went there Saturday before last, to buy some sweet corn. And boy, the crowd at the farmer's market is nothing like it was last year,
right?
With the pandemic in place, and there was not very many people there. Although there was 10 or 12 people in line at the Davies County sweet corn sales place, and I got to say the sweet corn was not up to its usual standard. It was a little old.
Yeah.
And, you know, the silks were real dark brown and kind of wet.
Mm-hmm.
And so I drove up to Martinsville to that garden stand on the south side of town there on Old 37 going into Martinsville. And they had tons of sweet corn, but the lady at the counter, whom you had to get within, I don't know, 3 feet of or less to buy anything, was wearing no mask, and neither was anybody else.
Right.
And so, and when we got that sweet corn back, it was, there was 13 ears, so they gave us a baker's dozen, which was nice, but it was old corn mixed in with maybe 3 or 4 freshly picked, you know, nice, juicy, fresh corn.
Right.
So I've been disappointed in sweet corn this year.
Yeah.
So actually, I had better sweet corn buying it at grocery stores in town than I did at the stand and at the farmer's market, although that's not generally the case.
Yeah.
And, things are a little different this year, a little different.
I have to say at the local grocery, I got some pretty good ones. I like to pick out the smaller ones because I know they're going to be a little,
yes,
little sweeter. And they were great. So,
I'm sad to say that that's where we'll be buying our next sweet corn. We'll be at the grocery store.
Yeah.
It's better. They're able to distribute their picket for wherever it's coming from, probably someplace a long way from here,
yeah,
and ship it here and get it in the store and on in the rack and on their display for a few days, and it's still better than what you're able to get locally.
Mm-hmm.
So, not as much as I hate to say that, so sorry guys, but better luck next year.
Yeah. Well, I am excited about, seems like we got some pretty good, you know, garden going this year, and I'm excited about getting into those tomatoes as soon as I can.
Well, we've had a couple, we've had some fall off in the rainstorms and, had to let those ripen on the counter inside, and they, you know, they're never quite as good as if they ripen out on the vine.
I read an interesting article about how to ripen tomatoes and when to pick them.
Uh-huh.
And quite honestly, I was kind of surprised. I'd like to know what you think about this, but they say to pick a tomato not when it's red, when it looks ripe, but when it just starts getting that overall orange color.
Uh-huh.
So they'll go from green to kind of orange and then uh-huh. red.
Uh-huh.
Apparently, if you pick them when they're orange, they will ripen just the same way they ripen on the vine because they're not receiving nutrients from the plant anymore in the same way. And it'll give more nutrients to the other tomatoes that are still greener on the vine. And then they also said, of course, do not put your tomatoes in the refrigerator because that completely stops.
Yeah.
The ripening process, and it also gets rid of nutrients, and it also makes it less tasty. So you always want to keep them out, but you don't want to put them on your windowsill.
Yeah, it does
not.
Dark.
It does not need sun to ripen. As a matter of fact, that stops the ripening as well, and it just makes it want to rot. So it says best to keep it in a fairly, you know, room temperature, like 70 degrees, 75 degrees, and a cool, dark place, like maybe your pantry or whatever, and they'll ripen just fine right there.
Yes, I've noticed that they always do better if you keep them in the dark. And I'm not so sure that I buy the pick them when they're orange advice, because mm-hmm. I have some that they didn't get picked. They came off. They fell off as when they were still orange, and they're still setting in there. And they have turned a little more red. And we ate one of them after it had been sitting there for a week.
Right.
And it was very acidy.
Yeah.
Very acidic. It was not sweet at all, and was not all that successful. So I'm going to stick with picking them when they're ripe on the vine, and maybe even starting to split a little bit.
Right.
And because they're pretty much always really good.
Yeah.
When they're like that.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's nothing like a good ripe one right off the vine.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So that's, you know, that's the way to go. Now I've had great lettuce. We had good green beans, which are still going. We've picked green beans three times off that little patch.
Right.
And we have new blooms on them. And of course, with those babies, the more water they get, the more they bloom.
Yeah.
So we're going to have another picking of green beans, and I've got good cilantro, and I've got, hey, you want any habanero peppers? I got some of those babies, and have some, I think they're called serpent cayennes, which are long, thin, red killer looking peppers.
Right.
That are look like we're going to really have harvests of those. And we have some red pepper plant and a green pepper plant, green bell pepper plant. And those are both, the plants are enormous, but the bell peppers, in my experience here, is they'll make one or two peppers early and then no others until nearly fall.
Right.
Till September. So that's what we're waiting on now. We have a couple of green peppers on there, whereas we have, there's maybe a dozen habaneros on that plant.
Huh.
And so I'm going to have lots of material to make my deer repellent.
Uh-huh.
And I know that works.
Well, one of the disappointing things for me about going to New Mexico was you couldn't go into a restaurant. So I was looking forward to some good green chili, and I really couldn't get much. I mean, you could get some on a hamburger or something, you know, but whatever. But there's just nothing like having a breakfast with huevos rancheros or something, you know, with green chili from the Rio Grande Valley there. Of course, everybody knows about Hatch chili, but it's just the best in the world. It's amazing tasting there.
Is it hot?
It can be. It can be extremely hot, and it can also be fairly mild. I mean, you just kind of got to – usually they're good enough to tell you beforehand if you're in a restaurant.
I nearly passed out in a restaurant eating.
Oh, yeah. People don't realize that if you get into some hot stuff, I mean, it'll just about kill you.
There's some of it that will kill you.
Yeah.
Will kill you. Well, anyway.
And I like really hot food. I like Thai food and all that stuff. But sometimes you just that one extra level, and man, you're in trouble. And you cannot stop it. You can't drink water, nothing. Just there for the duration till it dissipates.
Do you have some hot peppers planted in your garden?
We do. We have some jalapenos and some habaneros.
Mm.
But
those habaneros.
They're the next step up from jalapeno. They can be extraordinarily hot.
Yes, and those cayennes are those red ones.
Yeah.
Ooh, doggies. They're the slow burn, though. You know, they don't kill you when you put it in your mouth. It builds.
Yeah.
You know? It slowly builds until you're sweating.
We saw one of the, of course, the famous things about New Mexico is the red chilies. They hang from the front porch in the sun, you know, and they turn bright red.
Yes.
And also dark red, and they're just, oh, they're so good too. If you have carne adobada, which is sort of a pork that's marinated in that red chili sauce forever, and that gets fall off the bone tender, and then they put it into burritos and other things. And
of course, New Mexico is one of those states that hasn't had a ballooning virus numbers.
Not so much.
And compared to its neighbor, Arizona, which is just bursting with cases.
Right.
Texas, on the other side, is also bursting with cases. So I don't know how they're managing to hold it off.
Well, it just seems to have something to do with the politics, I think, because it's this whole thing of don't wear the mask and, you know.
I know. It's just...
I tell you, you know, you got...
Get it out, Ben. Spit it out. Spit it out.
I'm going to have to edit this. John Lewis died. And, you know, he was a civil rights leader and served in the House of Representatives for almost 30 years. He marched in Selma at the Edmund Pettus Bridge and was beaten up badly. And, you know, just an amazing person. And been a tireless advocate for Native Americans, Black Americans, and anyone, everyone's civil rights. You know, he died. He's just one of the greatest statespeople that we've ever had. And Trump said, they asked him if he was going. He said, no, I'm not going there. So he's laying in state at the rotunda, and the president isn't going to show up. And I just feel that's a national disgrace. How can you continue to disrespect people that have given their entire lives for freedom? That just really kind of put it over the top for me. I
believe even Bush would have showed up for that.
I know he would have. Anyway,
he was noticeably absent. I have my own conspiracy theories, and I'm not going to express them here right now. But
right.
The way things are going, and with the new secret police forces out there, who knows? Maybe we'll have an election. Maybe we won't. I hope we do.
Yeah, I do too. Well, and that being said, I'm going to go on to another touchy subject. Back kind of involved with my trip is once we got out of New Mexico, we spent another 4 days in Colorado. The beauty of that state is just incredible. We stayed in Crestone, which is in south central Colorado, still a little bit south below the Rockies proper, but really cool place and real laid back and low population. It was really fun to be there. Anyway, one of the things that I saw there that I have never visited until last couple weeks ago was a marijuana store. It had the green, you know, Red Cross symbol. So it's like you can buy the medical marijuana or and it's legal now and for recreational marijuana in Colorado. And I wanted to check out the scene. You know, I've never been in one of those stores before. I've heard about it, but I think I must say that I was pretty impressed about the way the state's dealing with it and the people are dealing with it. I'll tell you straight up here, because I think that we need to just kind of open our eyes a little bit about this subject. It's a very powerful medicine for a lot of people. When I was in California, this was maybe 25 years ago, early 90s, I had a friend out there that was a paraplegic, and he had tremors and stuff, you know, I mean, really bad. And of course he couldn't help himself. And, he had to buy marijuana on the black market. Of course, back then it was illegal in California as well. And, you know, it was the only thing that would stop these tremors. And literally he would be shaking and then, you know, smoke a little, and then he would get better. And now we've seen the benefits of CBD, which is not psychoactive, but it's still very much beneficial for people. It's very much proven. I've been taking a little CBD in the last year. I tried it out, and it seemed to help with sleep patterns and other things without being high. And of course, you look at the politics of the drug war and why it was originally, you know, illegal and stuff. And it's amazing to me, and it always has been, that alcohol, you know, is legal.
Yes.
And it just does so much damage from people being
Yes.
killed in cars to liver disease to everything you can think of. And, of course, this is an old thing to say. I think everybody knows it. But marijuana just does not have that thing. Of course, you shouldn't drive, you know, when you're stoned or something. And I would imagine that would be an impairing as well. Probably not as bad as being drunk, but people didn't seem to be doing that. And you know, without getting into the politics of the whole thing, I went in there and the guy was friendly, knowledgeable, educated, totally, you know, there to serve you and educate you on anything you needed to know. And you know, I had to say at the very end of the trip, you know, we had been treated pretty badly at drive-thrus and things, and people were pretty darn incompetent, even though that's all they had to do was, like, stand at a window and give you food. But we'd get cold fries or whatever, you know, I mean, just awful stuff. And it's like, you know, the only place that we went to that was a public place where they treated you with respect and education and knowledge was the marijuana store, which is where you would think that, according to everybody, you know, the whole old adage, oh, just a bunch of old stone hippies, you know, can't put two and two together. And it was actually the best run place that I've actually run into in a long time. And they were helpful, and they weren't trying to push drugs on you or anything. It was just... a very interesting experience for me because I, you know, of course it's illegal here and stuff. And I just want to see for myself what it was all about.
Well, I, along these same lines, I just spoke recently with someone from Illinois, and they have legalized marijuana in the
yes.
Illini
yep.
state. And
including recreational, which is a...
Yes, and of interest. Is that they were selling recreational weed, as the DNR calls it. They were selling that for $60 an eighth of an ounce,
mm-hmm.
for an eighth of an ounce.
Yeah.
Well, you know, what does that come out to for a whole ounce? That'd be eight times six. That'd be $480.
Right, right.
Well, I did a little research around here, and even though the students are gone, prices remain about the same at between $200 and $300.
Mm-hmm.
So the illegal street guys are cheaper than the legal guys in Illinois.
Right.
So I wonder if that's a kind of thing that's going to happen as other states legalize it as we go along. The people have been saying, well, the price is going to go up. Well, maybe it is. But, you know, it won't matter to me since I cannot. And but it will matter to people who do like it.
Well, the one thing about Colorado is they say you're allowed to grow a certain amount. I don't know how much it is. I just remember reading this that I think it's maybe a pound a year,
uh-huh.
or I don't know, or whatever, but or you're allowed to have so many plants. And I don't know uh-huh. how much a plant necessarily yields. I'm sure it depends on the kind of plant it is and everything else.
Highly variable, I would think.
Yes. But the interesting thing is you should be able to grow it yourself. And I yeah. you know, other than that, I know it's probably going to be more expensive because it's under huge scrutiny by the state, you know, because they're making their money. They want their money out of it, you know.
Well, and also the big corporations are interested and
Absolutely.
Have already been buying operations, small operations, snapping them up, actually.
Right.
In states where it's legal. And Michigan is also legal
yes.
to some extent. I don't know how far they are along in it, but...
But, you know, one of the major things I wanted to say was the police seemed a lot more low-key about it. There were some sheriffs in the town that we were in, and I saw people walk, you know, sitting on their porch, smoking a joint and hanging out. And it didn't seem like there was a lot of problem. It just seemed kind of normal. And I was very impressed with the whole Colorado sort of vibe, you know, of... you know, you could still be conservative and not do it or anything like that. And you could, and then if you wanted to, it was just like you didn't have to worry about going to jail for 10 years because you had a marijuana yeah. cigarette, you know. And I think yeah. that's a beautiful thing from alcohol. If you're moderate with it, it's fine. I mean, I'm not against having some wine and doing whatever.
Well, you know what? One of the major stimuluses for the temperance movement back when all the women took to the streets was the fact that their husbands were beating them up. They would go to the bar and get drunk and come home and beat them up.
Yeah,
and it kind of goes with it. Now, I suppose we're probably going to hear from some bar owners and whatnot on this, but it's a fact.
Well, and I'm not trying to make a speech on temperance because, you know, it's fun to go out and listen to some music and have a beer, right? However... Speaking of getting drunk and getting into trouble, you sent me a very interesting PDF on the from the IDNR law enforcement, which is the case data sheet for this situation with Vaux Booker.
And, yes, the Lake Monroe racial incident.
Right, which we reported on a few weeks back. And I want to caution people that we're not trying to take sides or anything. We're just trying to report it. It's a Lake Monroe thing. It's in our outdoors, and it has to do with the various things we talk about all the time, which are, you know, private property, DNR, conservation officers, and everything else. And there was a lot of communication or lack of communication and sort of issues that came up. And I thought there was, when you read the entire thing, I thought it was interesting because it definitely cleared up some of the questions that I had and also added some questions. All the interviews they had with the juveniles and the,
which was several quite more interviews than you had any idea they would have done.
Right, on both sides. And so it took me about an hour and a half to really. And so I have to say, if anything that I want to say here on the show is to educate yourself.
Oh, and I'd like to notice, number one, add to what you're saying there. There was at least a dozen different officers involved in these interviews, which was more than I initially had been led to believe. There was only a few.
Right.
And there were all throughout the state, there were different ranks everywhere from majors down to newly appointed conservation officers.
Right.
And during the interview with one of the people, there was at least one FBI agent present,
right,
as a witness. So there was a lot more done than we might have thought initially. So I too think that there is plenty of racism in this country, and that Black lives do matter, and that we need to change that.
I'm glad we had this PDF that you sent me that lists all the interviews and things, because it's worth people checking out. Is this something that everyone can find, this PDF?
Yes, in fact. It was posted on Facebook on the Bloomington News and Weather page.
Okay.
Underneath the, there's a, the story filed that was posted by the attorney, and the there's a list of replies under there, and this was one of the replies. So it's all right there. And
well, this is the official, you know, law enforcement case data sheet. So it's worth reading if you're interested in it,
right,
in actually learning about what happened. Anyway, that's our report on that. And you said you had some other stuff to talk about.
Oh, well, I just have some actual outdoor news. Mm-hmm. And that is that the DNR has posted a list of all the hunter education courses, events, and there's quite a few of them starting August the 1st, and they're nearly every place in the state except Bloomington. So there is one in Bedford. I should post this. I think I did put it on the Facebook Inside Outdoor site. So I think I'm not going to read all these off because there's really too many. This is a big difference from in the past when they used to have only a few mm-hmm. hunter education courses available.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there's lots of them this year, and there's really no excuse for you not being able to get to one of them. And check out Inside Outdoors Facebook. I've already posted it on our site, and you'll be able to look at the whole thing. Otherwise, you can go to dnr.in.gov and look up the Hunter Education, Indiana Hunter Education.
Great.
You can either look for it there or look for it on Facebook, on my site, or on the Indiana DNR law enforcement page. Also, there's plenty of access to it. That's it.
Another thing that's out there, I mentioned a couple of weeks ago, Lake Monroe has a water sampling blitz. It's going to be Friday, September 18th. You can volunteer through on Facebook, friendsoflakemonroe.org. There's other places to do that, but that's basically where I've heard about it. You can register online if you'd like. This is something to do with the limnology lab at Indiana University. They are looking to basically sample water around the Lake Monroe watershed. It's a great chance. It's going to be in September, mid-September, so it'll be beautiful weather, hopefully.
I want to add something there, Rich. The connection to the IU Limnology Lab is that the Sherry Hunter Mueller, I'm not sure about the last name, mm-hmm. who started the Friends of Lake Monroe group, works at the for the Department of Limnology. She's a limnologist.
Oh, okay.
And she is a disciple of David Fry, whose wife, Libby Fry, was one of the very first people to start to talking about the ecology of Lake Monroe and the siltation. And these are other issues that are on the burner right now at Lake Monroe. So check that page out, Friends of Lake Monroe. And, it's a worthwhile group, and it's based on science. And that's what we need right now at Lake Monroe. And by the way, Lake Monroe is on the list of lakes in Indiana where if you go to the lake and you go for a swim, make sure not to swallow any water. And when you get out, make sure to shower. There are other lakes, many others, and even some specific beaches, including the main beach at Patoka Lake, that have that same warning.
Right.
So just check it out.
And that kind of wraps it up for us this week, right?
I guess so. There's some other things that have happened. There's been some drownings and some ORV deaths, but those have happened already, and they're not really newsworthy at this point, I don't suppose, although the people who are related to the people who died probably think differently.
Yeah.
But anyway, next time we're on, we'll get back to that routine.
Right. And again, we always talk about safety, and it won't be long. Hunting season and other things are coming up. I can't believe how fast the summer is going away and the fall is coming.
Don't forget your hunter education course.
Have you done any fishing? That'll be my last question.
I have not. It's been too hot for me, although it's been, if you get out there early enough, for a few hours in the morning, it's certainly satisfactory. And actually, this time of year, if you want to catch anything, it's probably good to go at night.
Yeah.
At least if you want to catch walleyes, wipers, fish like that are much more available at night. Catfish also, but catfish, channel cats at Monroe, you can catch them just about any time of the day.
Just about any time. And they don't like the real hot times. It depends on how deep the water is.
Okay.
All right.
We'll see you next time.
All right. Talk to you later.
See you.
Bye, everybody.
Everybody.
Well, that's all we have time for today. Inside Outdoors comes to you from the beautiful rolling hills and green forests of southern Indiana. Thanks for listening. Inside Outdoors is brought to you each week on Saturday mornings at 7 a.m. right here on your local community radio station, WFHB. If you happen to miss the show, you can listen online at wfhb.org. Just go to the public affairs listing and you'll find a podcast of our show.